www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans with a Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here as usual with Martin. How are you doing this week, Martin?
Not too bad. A miserable, damp August day in the UK.
Absolutely. Don't you just love it? Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, we've got a guest this week, and we're going to have a very interesting discussion talking about unstructured content. So Brian from Pure Storage is with us. Brian, whereabouts are you located?
It's neither miserable nor damp here. I'm located in Dallas Metroplex of Texas, and it's only hot and miserable here.
It must be really hot then, is it, for this time of year?
It's survivably hot at the moment. It could be worse.
So why don't you just take a few seconds and introduce yourself to the audience? Obviously, I said you're from Pure, but if you can just take a bit more time, and that'll probably help us frame the discussion for today.
No problem. Brian Carpenter, as you said, Senior Director, Unstructured Technology Strategy for Pure Storage. My responsibility is everything as it relates to unstructured and emerging technologies globally. And there's tons of work that goes on, a lot of focus on FlashBlade, and obviously where FlashArray Files and Portworx fits in as well.
Super. Excellent. Right. So we're going to talk about what you call UFFO. Is that the right acronym?
It is.
Excellent. Unstructured, fast, file, and object.
Yeah, we might say unified.
Unified. Okay.
Yeah. The concept being that it's on the same system for both file and object, and you know the key being delivering it fast, and you know we would say also high throughput as part of that concept, right?
Okay, yeah, perfect. Well, let's talk about the market in general then, and how we've got to this point, and how we've even got to the need of having this as a sort of market term. You know, what's your opinion of how this market's evolved, Brian, and how have we got to this point?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the file market's been around for a long time. There's a lot of problems to solve within file. If you think about the history of things like NFS, things like SMB, and all the other types of file systems that are out there, the challenges that they're solving, and you look at where they began and where we are today, there's a lot of challenges around scale. And you know, how do you take scale, and then how do you do that simply? Because there's a lot of people who can do scale. There's a lot of people who can do file. But can they do file at massive scale simply? And massive scale doesn't always mean exabytes, right? It also means quantity. What does it mean to do 10 billion or 100 billion objects or files and things like that? And what does it mean to those challenges? And then you look at object, which you know evolved, I mean, candidly, out of some of the same concerns, right? How do I take programmatic access to files and make it simpler? And maybe I do it this way instead, and I want this cloud scale type thing that we want to think about. And then, you know, object is also evolving, right? Object's initial thoughts were around doing certain things with objects. And then over time, there's other things, you know, as applications have learned to adopt object and be native from an object perspective, you know, they have different types of challenges. And when they're born on the cloud, they even have more challenges. They have expectations that when you rationalize them on-prem have to be considered. So yep. That's what we were thinking about when we designed the system, and that's why we unified them together with the principle of being fast.
Okay, and we'll come back to the technology in a second, but yeah. Martin, just to you know look at this sort of evolution of the object market, you and I have talked about object for a long, long time, and the convergence with file, and just generally how we manage this sort of content, and it's been a long story, hasn't it? It's been a long road.
It's been a very long road. Can you remember the Atmos announcement many, many years ago from EMC, when they were still EMC and they tried to make a big thing about it? It was going to be huge. And they really oversold the capability, I think we can say on that. So we've been seeing object for some time. For a long time, I think people really struggled with the on-prem idea of object on-prem. What was the use case? Everybody thought it was a pure cloud. And the file systems were big enough, you didn't really need this huge scale. But I think we're starting to see that change. But the evolution, as you say, we're starting to see it, we're seeing more of it. But we've also seen some smaller object deployments as well. I mean, I can remember talking to our friend Enrico many years ago. He says, well, not everybody needs petabytes. Some people just want a few hundred terabytes.
Yeah, I do think that the whole object and file market has evolved. Object has certainly become much more attractive to people because the use cases have grown more. And we're going to talk about the use cases in a second. But certainly, we have seen an evolution of that. And we obviously have been told for years that object and file, the unstructured market, is where all the growth's going to come. And you know, that's been something we've talked about for a long time, Brian, isn't it? That these are the two areas where we're going to see significant growth compared to the block area.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, even if not from an opportunistic perspective, I mean, the ability of the types of systems that create the amount of data that are necessary, you know, we simplify it all the time of like, how many selfies have I taken today and how much data did that create? But just the story of IoT and what it means to be able to do, you know, the types of log lines that you need, all these things, that's all unstructured content. It's really easy to create. And of course, just like VM storage is free, right? The unstructured market is obviously growing. You can look at every single report about it's exponential. And block storage is critical to the success of unstructured, but it's still not growing at the same pace.
Yeah. And that's not to sort of, you know, put a slight on the block market at all. I just think that we're expecting the exponential growth in the object side of things. And we've highlighted a few things there. You know, we talked about some of the simplicity challenges and stuff like that, which we're going to talk about. But I'd like to just spend a little bit of time and dig down into some of those use cases, because how long have you had FlashBlade as a product in the market now?
A little bit over 4 years.
4 years. So yeah. When that first came in, people might have thought, wow, that's very interesting architecture. And we're going to get to very briefly to talk about the technology. But in 4 years, you've seen, I would expect, quite a lot of use cases that possibly are expected, but possibly not expected.
Yeah, that's actually, I mean, it is the joy of the job. Having been here for just a little bit, just around the same amount of time, plus or minus 6 months of when FlashBlade came into market, it's really been fun to see that, like, where we targeted, which is really, if I simplify it, it's that kind of like DevOps, technical computing, all those things that you kind of expect out of what is an object developer look like, kind of stuff. How do you solve those problems for object and file? But the winter being over for AI was obviously something that we didn't necessarily predict, but we appreciated what it did for the market. And at the same time, you know, data protection, just like file and an unstructured type of technology, again, has been around for so long that you saw this need in the market for being able to not protect data quickly, but rather restore it quickly. That there's so much more unstructured data now and so much more to protect that the ability to restore it is a consistent challenge for a lot of customers. And so you get this, my day wakes up with like AI and data scientists and ends with a CISO and business continuity. And they're both extremely critical conversations for an organization. And the fun thing about it is we're able to help across all of those. And we continue to be able to help with all the things that you expect from cloud native and all these modern apps and modern analytics type use cases.
Yeah. Just digging down into that, Martin, the idea of using an all-flash unstructured platform to store backup data initially seems somewhat counterintuitive if you've been in the market a long time, because we're pretty much used to putting backup data onto the cheapest media possible. And that's a real reflection of the way the market's changed, I think.
It depends on your RTO, RPO. I mean, that's what it's... If you've got a recovery time objective or recovery point objectives, which are very, very tight, putting it onto a faster media makes a lot of sense. You don't want it on your near line. You may move it out there eventually for your longer term retention. But for those things where you want to be able to recover quickly, having it on flash, it may not be your fastest flash. You may have faster flash, but you may be moving it wrong. It's this whole continuum of storage starts on very fast and eventually ends up going cold. It just moves through.
Yeah, and I think that's also a bit of an evolution of the market in general, because if you look at where we came from, we put it all offline, then we moved it to things like VTLs and disk-based backup, and it has over time become much more critical to the operation, I think, on a 24-hour basis. The fact that we need to be able to run our platforms 24/7, and if there is an issue, we need to be able to get them back online, and it is RTO and RPO, Brian, as Martin just said, that is probably driving your customers to want to look at this as a technology.
Yeah, I mean, the R and RPO and RTO, that rapid recovery is what people are asking for. I do believe the backup problem is good. So we tend to say we would do it better. We can help backup. There are certain times where we've had customers who literally couldn't meet their backup windows because they've grown so much and they just needed a new technology and is the right time to move. The benefit was they also got that restore experience, which is where we're seeing a lot of people who had, you know, the Web 2.0 architectures and could do all sorts of crazy things with NVMe that still couldn't get the type of throughput it requires to do a massive restore in a timely manner. And then you pile on with that, which is, you know, selfishly fun. You pile on with that something like ransomware, where the event causes a really interesting backup scenario. Like, how many people architected or think about restoring one VM or one database versus their entire system in a meaningful time frame to impact the resiliency of the business? You see people paying ransoms just because they can't restore on time, not because they don't have the data protected appropriately. And so things like that are tell you the answer to what Martin said, which is it is all about that restore. And then certain people care. And when they care, Flash is a really good answer.
Yeah. Martin, what about from your perspective in terms of the drivers around not necessarily CDN type content, but I suppose it is to a certain degree, you know, even just the editing, the management of that content and being able to manipulate that content really quickly. I guess that must have changed significantly in the last 10 years since Object first came in.
Yeah, we're still not seeing a huge amount of adoption on the desktop for object editing technologies. But yeah, I mean, for performance, we're seeing so much more come through. I mean, you've editing UHD on the desktop, HDR comes through, more and more 8Ks. We're almost seeing it. Even though codecs and compression technology is getting more efficient, but everybody's trying to push more out. So for instance, you'll find that people are going from a 50i to a 50p workflow as progresses to interlace, which doubles the amount. HDR again will double again. Then you'll find that people, as I say, are doing UHD, some people doing 8K, uncompressed, raw. So it's really driving performance, but you also want the ability to move it out. So Object plays it in this this continuum of storage. It's much easier to write a continuum where you can just move things from one tier to another. But I think that's actually one of the big advantages Object actually has. It's I just get the feeling it might, well, and this is just a feeling, but it's probably easier to do that kind of tiering within that object namespace, for instance.
Yeah. Are there any other areas, Brian, that you think that we know we've not talked about that perhaps customers might or end users might be surprised that object and file is unifying to solve?
Maybe not surprised, but it's more of the kind of thought process around it. You highlighted already, there's these use cases that people have today with application vendors that exist today in a certain type of paradigm. They are file, and their challenge today is they're trying to do what they're trying to do, and the file structures are becoming more and more difficult for various number of reasons. The vendor over time is going to eventually, they're all going to get there. They're eventually going to decide to adopt object in one form or fashion. And so now it becomes more about the investment scenario for the customer. Can you invest in something that sort of solves your problem today or does solve your problem today and also solves your problem tomorrow without having to reinvest? And so the idea that you can get something that solves for a lot of file challenges where you weren't expecting, you didn't even know that those answers were there. You know, the ability to do, you know, millions upon millions of files in a directory without having some of the impacts that traditional systems have, and then know that that same vendor is going to refactor to object eventually, if for no other reason than the pressure of the cloud, and not having to re-architect, not having to redesign a system because you're already leveraging one that can do both of them fast. So rather than use cases, it's sometimes about the architectural implementation of your strategy that is just as much of an impact.
Okay, I mean, we'll talk about the specifics of the technology in a second, but I think that's a really interesting point. If you imagine today you've been very much focused on file, and file's been the way you've managed your content, but in actual fact, you don't need some of the more advanced features that file will give you. So you don't necessarily need all that degree of locking, or you don't need file structures and hierarchies and all those other things that go with it. And you can get a lot of that out of object. At some point, you may say, well, actually, these particular use cases are going to work better in object because we can program to them a lot more efficiently, and we're not going to hit the bottlenecks that come in the networking protocol from a file perspective. But then you don't want to buy that technology all over again. You know, if you can start saying we're going to put some of that there and then we're going to drop the amount of file we've got, you know, there's a transition process you can do if it's all on a single platform.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's, you know, that's fun about that is the, you know, you brought it up. It could be a content management system. It's some of my most fun use cases right now is having somebody who has an in-house sort of developed pipeline around content. Even they have scale problems that they weren't expecting. You know, they acquired 15 new companies that all do content management. They're consolidating, and all of a sudden now they have a billion files. Way bigger problem than they had before. The other thing is the exact same problem, the exact same people are calling you about a database that does files that is also doing object, right? And so like these data warehouses that are leveraging object, it's just really fun to be able to work on these unstructured problems and the diversity of use cases. It's a new challenge every day. It's a new fun thing. thing to solve for. And, you know, of course, I want to call afterwards and talk to Martin about AK and 50i and 50p and learn a lot more there too as well. It's fun every day.
Yeah. Well, you're the expert, Martin, so, you know, I'm sure you can set a reasonable consultancy rate.
I can just tell you how frightening it is and what impact it has on your network and in general and the size of the files which you're talking about. I suppose they're pretty large. I mean, not as big as some of the genomic files. So, depends how they're structured, but yeah.
So just following up on that, Martin, I mean, from your perspective, you know, if you were in a position where you were looking at it and you didn't know what the business was going to come up and ask you, and, you know, you didn't know particularly what protocol they might choose in the future, and you just said, you know what, why can't we just have a platform that serves either of these things out? Now we don't have to worry about it. Just make it uniform. And as long as you could do it efficiently, that seems to me like a much more sensible approach than having two separate platforms that do this independently.
That's kind of a holy grail to have a unified object and file platform at the moment, because if you look in many workflows, some workflows will want to use file and some will want to use object. And you want to avoid duplicating data as much as possible. It is challenging. I mean, it's something which I have looked at quite a lot. For instance, you have all kinds of issues. If you, we always used to have an issue in file, which we had SMB and NFS, and we had very different security models. If you start throwing an object protocol on top and the IAM challenges around that, those security models become very, very complicated very quickly. So that's where I think one of the biggest challenges is. You can make an object look like a file, you can make a file look like an object, but special metadata in the object, which just gives you a file path, or you can do funky things to make a file be presented as an object. But there's all kinds of issues around access controls, for instance.
Yeah. So why don't we talk about that in a bit more detail then, Brian, the technology and that level of detail, because, you know, those sort of things are going to be really critical to customers who are looking at it and saying, well, I'd like to have the option to do file, object. And if you're going to tell me this is a unified platform in order for me to do that, I'm going to be expecting certain things. My expectation is going to be there that you're going to be fixing some of these problems. So, you know, what in the architecture of the platform is there to allow this to happen?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's really important to, first of all, differentiate that, you know, having unified protocols in a platform doesn't mean necessarily universal access, right? And so you're not going to write an object and then randomly pick it up with NFS and do those things. There are always people who, you know, from a marketing perspective will say, hey, you should be able to do all of this. And then you think about the reality of exactly what Martin said, the implementation portion, where it gets utterly complex. And so, you know, today we keep those, we keep the file and object namespaces separate. First of all, for, you know, we don't see a ton of demand for that. We see a lot of asks engineering wise. There's always the curiosities, right? We are as technologists extremely curious because we're always looking for that thing. But the reality is there are tons of things that you can do with file today, and there are tons of things you can do with object today. And you can even do them in the exact same platform, with the exact same application. You can literally back up your primary policies with Commvault on file with NFS. And Martin, to your point, we've had customers that have like had Commvault, been frustrated with X, Y, and Z in their architecture. They re-architected with FlashBlade and found massive network challenges that they then got to re-architect their network to get the amount of throughput that we were offering for their data protection strategy. And then they use the exact same platform, Commvault, and the innovations that they've done in Object, which, by the way, they've done a great job from a what you would think is like a cheap and deep use case of data protection, of optimizing their object for throughput. And, you know, they get killer speeds on object as well, and they're actually using both in the exact same data protection strategy. And then they're lifting that off and sending it to cloud for that kind of next layer. And so, to Martin's point of like peeling the onion, there's a lot of different ways to do it. You get file, you get object, you get all that. You could do the same thing with Splunk. Splunk Classic, you can run on NFS. Splunk Smart Store, you can run on S3. We can optimize both to be a much better experience. That's what we're seeing a lot of, right? The same thing as your analytics pipelines. There's so many places where having both protocols really matters. And it is, to Martin's point, about identifying the security challenges, identifying the architecture, but it's not necessarily about combining the protocols just unilaterally, right? Mm-hmm. That is not the intent. It's more about the flexibility as tools change to be able to move to whatever makes sense for that application, for that architecture, for that use case.
So what about specifics though, Brian? What about specifics of the technology that's, you know, been in place since FlashBlade was actually developed?
Yeah, and, you know, so to that kind of that experiential portion of the application. You know, I try to say this all the time. I believe that we all know, like, we've been technologists. Some of us have a little bit of gray in our beards. Some of us have none. Some of us have no beards. Those are all, we've been around this stuff for a while, right? And we have these expectations we bring with us to the table. When you say the word NAS, when you say the word file, when you say the word object, you expect certain things. You expect the way it's designed. NFS has been around for a really long time, and it has design principles. What we would say for those challenges, for that, you know, for that unification is, the underpinnings of FlashBlade is this massively scalable architecture that was designed to be extremely simple, right? So that's one thing that's really, really important. The simplicity of scale, starting from a small namespace and going to an extremely large namespace, one blade at a time. Some of those architectural paradigms include the ability to be predictable, meaning each blade you add, you get all the compute and storage and all the things that we care about for you, simply so that you can predict the scale of the performance and the throughput of the applications you're adding on. Secondarily, it also means a lot to the applications. You can get into all these other things, which I believe you have blog posts about, we have tons of videos about you know, the fact that we really peeled back the underpinnings of the architecture underneath and made this kind of massively scalable key value store. You can call it an object store, but it's not the kind of object we're talking about here. And made it so that you can speak the protocol scalably, and you can also store that data simply, right? Getting rid of all the things like sectors, clusters, chunks, all those things that sort of drag down traditional file systems. What that means, though, is when you think about NFS, you have to think a little differently. You might think you need DNFS or PNFS or something like that to get parallelism. We can do that in NFS v3 without all of those things that are sort of technically challenging. You want to go fast with SMB? We would challenge that we can solve many SMB applications, throughput issues, which you would know if you've been around SMB for a long time. It's got some struggles in certain places. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing. It's the nature of how it was built. Same thing for object. And I think that one's the most important. We know what object is because we've been around it for 15 years. Thank you, Atmos, and thank you, S3, and thank you for all those things. But what we assume about when you rationalize object on-prem is that you're focused on the cost paradigm of the cloud. This much data, but cheaper. And the other paradigm that the cloud has brought with it over time is this throughput thing. The same throughput you're getting from file on-prem and some other things, you're getting hundreds of thousands of servers responding to you. And they're giving you a throughput experience, an aggregate throughput experience, that even if it's 50 milliseconds of latency, it's amazing from a performance perspective otherwise. And you rationalize that on-prem to something that was architected around a really important paradigm of cost. And what you end up not getting is that throughput that you were expecting from those applications. And so as you think about a multi-cloud, a hybrid cloud, a tethered cloud, all the different types of clouds that you might be building, and you think about rationalizing applications, and you think about these workloads, you want file to behave like file no matter where it is, and you want object to behave like object no matter where it is, and you have to think about what that means to the experience of the application. And that's where, you know, that's where we think that, you know, all the things that we've done from FlashBlade really make that different, but it also makes it important to understand that, right? Like that you're not coming into this thinking, oh, I just want that the same thing as that other object store. Or I just have this NAS over here and I want this one instead. We would say that it really does challenge those workloads that are challenging your existing systems. Is a really good way to think about it.
Yeah, I think I look at it, and I think you're probably going to say something on that side of it, Martin, in a second. I think when I looked at this platform when it was first developed, and obviously it was developed with both protocols in mind and both use cases in mind, I looked at it and thought, well, I look at, say, the way that traditional NFS, NAS, and SMB, and all of that has developed. It's developed from basically exposing a file system and then spreading that out across multiple nodes. But you introduce a huge amount of complexity in order to make that work. Taking it back to basics and separating protocol from actual data storage so that you know exactly how you're storing that content, and then you present it out in a way that's uniform, but also you build in things like the ability to, as you said, put blades in and expand that namespace without having to think about how you have to rebalance or reload or redistribute. All those sort of things become really important. And I think that, for me, that's the sort of things that I see in the architecture that are really, really useful.
Actually, it's really interesting, the conversation, because at the end of the day, it all comes back down to block. It's actually how you do everything. But the differentiator isn't the protocol access, it's what's going on right underneath and how you're laying out the data across your storage medium. And I think we talk about block being dead, but block is the fundamental building block of everything which we do. And I think this is where the work which Pure has done is interesting. And we're seeing more and more of this key value store. We're seeing it is as a way of storing data, whether it's a fragments of data, depending how you're doing it. And yeah, so I've for a long time I said it's storage has become a commodity, and it's really easy, and we've got the protocols, it's all that. But and it's very hard to differentiate between a different storage device. And I think we're getting to a stage where we begin to see differentiation again, and it's about these architectural differences right at the low end, or the low level, sorry. That's what's important now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you've got that architectural design right at the back end, then you can combine the two protocols together. Then, you know, you can scale that out and you can allow it to operate two different solutions at the same time. But if you haven't, you can't. But you highlighted, Brian, the fact that the simplicity of just expanding out by adding blades and chassis is a very different prospect to maybe the way that some other platforms do it. And those sort of things, I think, become really important in an environment that has to be 24/7 and is being used for things like data protection and all the sort of use cases you're talking about.
Yeah, and the converse of what you're highlighting is how customers are experiencing it, right? They purchase to solve one problem, and we solve a problem really well, and then they expand that problem. Then all of a sudden they call and they say, well, can't you solve this as well? And we say yes. And of course, there's architectural paradigms around all your eggs in one basket and two different types of systems being on the same system. But from our perspective, as the customer wants, you know, we talk about this thing called multidimensional performance. And essentially what that means is, you know, from a simplistic perspective, when you get there, the workloads tend to be really unpredictable to infrastructure admins. You know, you get this new thing and you're not really sure what it was. And so you sort of have always had to design for it. What if you didn't have to? And so what would you do instead if you could just kind of throw it on there and the system sort of said, yeah, I mean, I see what's going on here and no problem. But because of the way the system's architected, it's really not a major challenge. So you start to consolidate and you start to put in new things. And, you know, to your point, it's like, first I was solving a backup problem and now I'm solving a login analytics problem. Oh, and now I'm building up some analytics, you know, KVM stuff to get the agents tools next to the workloads and things like that. And oh, all of a sudden, you know, we're starting to test out some PyTorch models on here. And next thing you know, you're just really getting the true experience of UFFO, where you kind of have unified your workloads along with your protocols. And that's that consumer experience that I think Martin's sort of highlighting, you know, is that, you know, it kind of just starts solving problems for people because it's so easy to do. Because it sort of just gets out of the way and lets the workloads do what they need to do. And you know, the next workload tomorrow, it's not going to be that big of a surprise for us anyways.
Yeah, I'd just like to sort of point out that I think when you say that there are challenges or you shouldn't necessarily put everything in all your eggs in one basket and you put everything on a single platform, I think that's a degree of scale and a degree of growth. You know, you look at something and you say, well, actually, we might just decide to buy a platform and we use it for one purpose. Another purpose comes along, you start using it for that. But then that grows to a degree where you can justify saying, well, we need to split this now because operationally it'd be more practical. And you might do that, you might not do that. It's your entire choice. But that doesn't preclude you from putting it on the same platform. It just means that you grow to a point where you decide logically it makes sense not to do that. And that's historically, I think, what a lot of businesses have done.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's risk, right?
People might mentally... Those things come into it, yeah.
Yeah, people mentally go, oh, I can't put my data protection next to my analytics. You know, the modern story would be you have a Veeam and you're backing it up and you got Veeam data labs and you want to spin up a bunch of VMs and, you know, test that data lab and start doing some analysis of that, whatever. You want something performant enough to do that? Oh, you want to do that? Oh, and now we need some analytics tool. You see, it happens really fast. And so the question is really not about, from our perspective, you know, we believe we have the resiliency and the performance and in the tools to allow you to be able to do those things as much as you want to or as little as you want to. There are some practical business use cases where you do not want silos. We would probably shout from the mountaintops about consolidating data as much as possible. It just doesn't mean consolidate completely, right? That's not always the perfect scenario for an organization.
Yeah, certainly don't want silos, Martin, do you? You certainly don't want to be putting bits and pieces everywhere and then finding you're doing duplication and all the rest of it. And there is a balance between one direction and the other with all of this.
You want to minimize the number of copies of data you've got. So you don't want silos. You don't want to be moving data across the network if you can possibly do it, avoid it. So you really want to keep it within the storage subsystem. I'd say there is a place where you do want a silo. I'm still a great believer that you should silo off your data protection if you can, away from your main production workloads, because it's no criticism to Pure, but things do go wrong. And if you lose your production storage and your data protection, you're going to look really rather stupid. So we've talked about this this is a long running discussion, Chris. Always used to be the argument we had with our friends in NetApp, and actually they agree with us really. But a snap is not a backup; it's a recovery point.
Absolutely.
But
yeah,
it's,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know that's all architectural decisions. And I think that just leads me on to ask a question from both of you as to where we see this leading, because clearly if we start realizing that fast file and object is a category that people are going to start adopting significantly, where does the stuff go that we don't want to keep active, you know, the backup that we've you know archived off from 10 years ago or whatever it happens to be? Do we now see divergence here where perhaps the cloud becomes the place for some of that older, more inactive data, where you know we basically siphon bits off? Or do we see it all sitting on, you know, a platform that is of high performance? What do you think, Brian?
So, I mean, I tend to think over time that you know cost economies will solve some of that where does it all go thing. If we're looking at just today's window, I don't believe it all goes on one system in many cases. I don't believe that you want, you know, pictures of my pets in the same place as you, unless you're using it for AI, and in the same place that you're running your production analytics pipelines. And so, but you know, again, we tend to tell people, hey, use us to solve that top 30% that's really not working on your traditional system. And we're okay with that. We believe that's a great use of your dollars. Put things in the cloud where it makes sense as well. Over time, we are going to definitely see the convergence of, and we're already seeing it, right? The what Flash can do and where it fits within quote unquote drive speeds. You know, you're eventually going to get down to the point where whether it's a 5400, even a 4200, or even you know what Glacier is, like some version of tape, you're definitely going to see it get that direction. And when you do, you're going to start seeing way more all Flash. We all remember 10 years ago where, or even a little bit longer than 10 years ago, where the first flash drive started showing up in traditional storage. And then all of a sudden it was all flash systems, right? I think Pierre's pretty good at talking about that. And so, you know, it is going to happen. In the meantime, I see it as being a strategic choice of like, what does it mean dollars per terabyte to what is it, what drives the business versus what sort of is required retention type use cases.
Mm. I don't want to divert off and talk too much about this, but it's a good point, that Martin, isn't it? That you know the cost profile drops continuously. We see all flash becoming more and more justifiable. So the logic is that a higher percentage could sit on that platform without us deciding to put it off somewhere else. But you know that could be offset by just pure growth, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's interesting. You talk about where does your data end up. And Brian talks about you make sure you use it for the right use case. It brings us all back into one of our other favorite subjects, talking about tiering and HSM and trying to work out where your data goes. And that's the interesting thing when we start to move to object. If you have a large object file system, you can do it in the right way. You can tag things, so you can actually start defining the data lifecycle on the object so it can move itself. But a developer doesn't have to worry that it's moved off somewhere else. But they're just going to access it in the same way. So things might end up in the public cloud. They might end up on private cloud. They might end up on cheap and deep spinning like object store somewhere else. But that's definitely what we're going to see. You never know. It might end up on tape.
Well, indirectly, you know, even devices at front tape that, you know, present a file system so that you can use it. I'm not thinking of LTFS there. I'm just thinking of other devices that already exist that allow you to front tape in a much more effective manner.
Yeah, it was LTFS, which allows you to give you a mountable file system. Shouldn't be too hard to make it but look a bit like object. And obviously there's things like Black Pearl from Spectra.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about use cases, because, you know, we've talked about a lot of other pieces here, the technology and, you know, where we think the market's headed. What are your customers actually doing, Brian? And what can you give us as examples of what they've actually achieved?
I mean, a lot of everything. It's I honestly don't know where to start. It's like picking your favorite child, even though I have one. You know, you see things. So I think probably the one that when Martin was talking earlier, you guys were sort of talking about this object and what it means. Like when you see somebody doing something like data warehousing, Trino, which the product formerly known as Presto, you know, that Starburst product around a data warehouse, a modern data warehouse, heavily object-based. When you see somebody doing the amount of throughput that we're seeing in like these use cases where they're doing 40 gigabytes a second on our system using Object. And you imagine what they would have done even, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Those are the kind of things that really, you know, it's a very easy way to highlight to people what the power is of modern object, what the power is of fast object, right? So that's a fun one to talk about. A subset of that, and you know, you mentioned it earlier, I think Martin mentioned it, is, you know, you even get things where it's really, really interesting technically to see things like hot objects and like that somebody has an application where 400 different things are hitting one specific object. And what does that mean? And the amount of throughput they're driving off of a single object. And what would that mean in a traditional system as well? You know that the type of scale that you've built really is making an impact. And even though it's still really hard and we could improve, we are improving because we can see it and we can design for what does it mean to drive 10,000 nodes onto a single object and things like that for next year.
So, I mean, that's really interesting because that's a use case that I think probably isn't obvious if you think about objects. It could be easy to assume that everything's just going to be streamed and it's going to be lots of streams of lots of different objects. But actually, you can get a single object hit continuously in parallel. And that's not necessarily a great thing you want on a file system, you know, not with all the overhead of the protocol. So, but it sounds to me like you've got lots of interesting scenarios that customers are coming up with and surprising you with. And hence the reason why I guess it's difficult to talk about very specifically what they're doing, because there are so many choices to choose from and so many different ways that people are coming up with things.
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about the diversity of what it means to run an unstructured system. I try to talk about it as there's, even in analytics, there's five different ways people do analytics, five general things inside of like an analytics pipeline. You could sort of bubble them up. Under those five bubbles, there's 25 different players, and they do different things, and they think about things differently, and they cache differently, and all those kind of things. They prioritize certain protocols over another, and so it's really fun to think about those. You know, you get into, but it's, you know, you when you mention use cases and analytics, is fun to talk about, but like AI is just as fun to talk about, and it always sounds like, oh, that AI thing, that's the thing for somebody else. We all know that's not true. We all know that everybody's doing it or trying to do it in some form or fashion. It's just where and how much at this point. And, you know, it was one of those things that we didn't go, hey, we need to be the storage for AI. It was more like AI showed up and sort of woke up from being frozen. It was in the permafrost and now it's not. And, it needed parallelism and we had it. And so we started to be able to help people understand parallelism and concurrency. And you see all sorts of challenges in that. The one I like to quote the most is, you know, something I learned from a conference when I read somebody's technical paper was Amdahl's law. And it's this challenge where these massively parallel systems still have this serial choke point that doesn't just exist in AI. It exists everywhere. And so it's really fun to learn from a really, really struggling high-performance system like AI and then translate those exact same struggles into data protection. Right. It's part of being here and working on the system and seeing these workloads that teaches you things. And if you think your vendors aren't learning every day from the types of things you're doing to their systems, trust me, you know, like we're learning every day and it's hard and fun.
It's good to know that you've brought in that obligatory mainframe reference for us by mentioning Gene Amdahl. Although not specifically as a mainframe point, but yes, you're right. You know, he came up with some interesting observations, and it's true that those sort of things still exist in there today. So, yeah, I mean, we shouldn't focus perhaps too much on the mainframe, but there is still a need for the mainframe there, and, you know, they've still got challenges in that arena.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you and I have talked offline about how first of all, nothing goes away in certain cases, and so mainframe is still growing today. Yeah. It's fun. From my perspective, you know, the concept that FlashBlade has multiple customers of using different platforms and different backup softwares, backing up mainframe to all flash to object is just, you know, somewhere on the order of mind-blowing. It's almost more mind-blowing than some other thing. It's so much fun to talk about. Like, it's the kind of thing my dad will actually be proud of me for doing, right? So it's really cool stuff.
So you realize that Martin and I both worked in the mainframe era and both worked on mainframe. So for us, that's quite an interesting evolution, Martin, isn't it, really?
Well, it is, yeah. But I'm now intrigued. I'm wondering how you're doing it, and I want to know what level of the access is. Are you cheating? Are you using Linux on the mainframe? Are you using a proper mainframe operating system? How's it all working? I mean, that's probably what Chris wants to know, too.
It sounds like that could be a podcast in its own right, by the sounds of it.
I have a feeling I'm supposed to start my own consultancy, right, Martin? And well, yeah. Maybe we could trade information later. It's really not that complex at all. Thanks to third party vendors.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so if people want to find out a bit more about this technology and go off and learn a bit more, because I think probably one of the things that strikes me with this, Brian, is that, you know, it's as deep as it is wide in terms of the application use case, and actually in some respects, potential customers might be better off just coming and looking at some of your collateral that you've got. So where should we point people to?
So obviously Pure Storage's website, there is under the FlashBlade portion, there is a FlashBlade test drive, which is great. The ability to just pick one up and go run with it is certainly one way to look at it. I think if you're doing your job well, though, a simple UI is kind of a boring demo. So, you know, we tend to want people, challenge people to find a workload and POC the result but that's one way to educate as well. Obviously there's tons of videos out there. I think you're probably part of some of them. I know there's a really recent Tech Field Day, that is, I believe, a really good explanation by a better Brian than I, Brian Gold. He went through a good hour and a half grilling from Tech Field Day really recently. But I believe there's tons of places to get some of that data.
Excellent. And what I'll do is I'll go through and we'll make sure we collate that. As usual, we'll add those to the show notes. And, you know, I'll point people to all the stuff that I've talked about. So I've talked about the FlashBlade product and just generally this market a number of times. And we've got plenty of links on that. So there's lots of stuff for people to go and look at. But for now, Brian, it's been a great conversation. Really appreciate your time. Thanks very much. And, you know, maybe you can come back in a little while when the next set of innovations for FlashBlade come out and give us a bit more of an update and tell us what's happening next.
All right. Thanks so much. We really appreciate you both having us out.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.